Welcome to Real Talk on the Let's Talk podcast. I'm David Carroll with Hamilton County Superintendent Dr. Justin Robertson. And as always, it's good to see you.
Good to see you.
I have gotten many responses from our podcast. I do one every few weeks with you, and I know you do others. But people will sometimes say, hey, I heard what you said on the podcast the other day. And I do a few other podcasts now and then. And I'm like, which one? And they go, oh, well, the one with Justin Robertson. So we know you're listening.
We're getting more viewers. Is that what you're saying?
Viewers and listeners and whatever else you do with the podcast. But we appreciate you being out there. Yeah, and we hope we can share some good information with you. All right. This is probably the last time I'll talk to you in 2025. And he's smiling about that. So
let's hope so. I'm just kidding.
Let's hope so. So I want to do a little bit of an inventory before we get into some of the particular questions. It's always interesting just to catch up on some big topics. For instance, I was thinking a couple days ago, some issue came up. There was an incident at a school that involved some arrests. And I remember, you know, years back, decades back, that there were generally no police officers at schools. Yeah. This started, I think, pretty much in the 90s when the school resource officers program began. And then it was only at a few select schools because there just wasn't that many officers to go around. Things have really changed. So looking at now versus then, and from your perspective when you first came back to Hamilton County, we have school resource officers or school support officers, campus support officers at most, if not all, the schools. Just give us a review. Are you happy with where things stand right now?
Yeah, we are. I think that if you go back to even 10 years ago, the progress that we've made with help of Chattanooga Police Department, but a big commitment from Austin Garrett and the Hamilton County Sheriff's Office, essentially, we're at a place now where the majority of our middle and high schools are covered by an SRD, a school resource deputy, or an officer from Chattanooga, East Ridge, or Soddy Daisy. Mainly at the elementaries, we're covering with our student safety officers, which we committed to that, I want to say the summer of 2022 is when we expanded it. We started it right when COVID hit, like the first 10 SSOs came on board, I think a week before COVID hit. But we expanded it to where we were getting close to full coverage summer of 2022. I think that that program is essential. I think that it's also important for our community to recognize there's more that goes in to school safety than just one strategy. SROs, SRDs, SSOs are part of it. And we are committed to that program. We want to make sure that not only do we have full coverage, but we have overlap so that if someone's on sick leave or military leave, we have someone that can go in behind them. I think that we've come a long way in school safety, not just from that program, but even from a facility standpoint. Now in almost every one of our campuses, we have controlled entrances, which is a big deal. We have locks that have the key fob so staff can go in and out of. So we've made a lot of progress. I think it's something that we've got to continue to evaluate, though. And I think coming in the new year, we're going to take some steps to do a couple of small pilots to see if some other things might create more safe environments. I want to emphasize, though, for the community, I do this for our staff, the people element of it is essential. And what I mean by that is, we've got to have students that have connections to our adults in the schools so that when something's off, they'll go talk to that adult. We've got to have parents that are reporting to us if something is not right. And so it is about the physical buildings. It's about the people in the schools, but it's also about those relationships and connections.
And I wanted to emphasize that because one school, an elementary school that I was in a few weeks ago, there was a new officer there. I'm pretty sure Hamilton County officer, and this is a rather small elementary school, not a lot of issues that seem to be ever popping up. And I hear criticism occasionally. Somebody will say, yeah, you know, we've got a lot of officers now. We've got officers in schools where nothing ever happens. Okay. And on face value, I get that because you have schools where something happens more frequently. But I like the fact that in that particular school, that officer is making eye contact with fourth graders, fifth graders, little ones. But I say fourth and fifth graders because, you know, these days that's an age where kids sometimes can turn left, turn right,
right,
and really determine the path they're going to take as a person. And I like the fact that that guy's there, that they know where he is, he knows where they are, and that relationships are being made. And the fact that when I was in school, anytime I saw a police car or a police officer, we kind of panicked. And I don't think kids are doing that now.
Yeah, I think the relationship, especially when you have an SRO or SRD that's been in the school for a long time, it's essential. And not just the relationship in the school, but I think it goes a long way in terms of community trust for our law enforcement agencies. And it's interesting, you said something that pinged for me of like a small school where something rarely happens. That is true of many of our schools. Sure. But what I also know about many of our schools is that they're, because of our geography, response times from law enforcement will vary. And so some of our schools that maybe nothing ever happens, that's true. But if something did happen, the response time might be longer. And so it's not just about, you know, dealing with the day to day. It's adding a layer of safety that hopefully brings some confidence to our staff and to our families that school buildings are safe places to be.
I like that perspective on it. And another element of, I guess you'd call, adult support that doesn't get talked about a lot, but we get occasional inquiries about this, are school nurses. And that's something else that the number has varied over the years, depending on budget and availability and that sort of thing. Are we where we need to be there?
We are. We have a nurse in every building, at least one. In some buildings, we have two, depending on the needs of the students. And we have a number of PRNs that can come in. And
a PRN?
I can't remember what that stands for. It's basically a sub nurse. Yeah. It's someone that comes in part-time we'll fill if we've got a nurse that is sick or a nurse that's taking vacation. And so we've got really good coverage with nurses. And that's, again, when you're reflecting on where we were, I was a principal in three different schools, and one school never had a nurse, one kind of off and on, and the third had a nurse most of the time. And so we've come a long way in terms of making sure that we have that level of care in our schools. What I also love about this, and it started, we talked in another episode earlier this year about Clifton Hills, and they recognize their kids don't have great access to healthcare. And in our staffing model, the first year they came to us and they're like, what could we turn our nurse into a nurse practitioner? Use some of our strategic dollars to pay the difference. We're like, that's a great idea. How do we make that happen? And have worked with a couple of different groups and working hopefully more and more closely with the health department to expand that. But we've got some schools that have nurse practitioners. And so you think about, I think about my daughter a lot, and I'd probably use her as an example too much, but as a young girl, had, you know, ear infections a lot, very rarely missed school for it because we would take her to the doctor and get antibiotics. And most parents know that those things clear up pretty quickly when you get the right attention. Many of our families don't have that access. And so you've got kids that are missing school for things that they shouldn't miss school for. And so having that PRN there that can see them, prescribe the medication, a family can run down the road and get those meds pretty, at a reasonable rate, it helps improve our attendance, and it helps improve outcomes for those schools. And so not just nurses in every school, but thinking creatively of like, how do we partner with different agencies to create situations where we don't have kids that are missing school for ear infections.
Right. And I'm glad you mentioned ear infections, because both sons had those too, more often than we would like. That's probably why we had only two children instead of four or six.
you're 100% more than me. I only had one, and it was the tubes and the tonsils coming outward. That was awful. Don't want to think about that.
A lot of challenges. Another support staff position that has gotten more attention than most this time because of, let's face it, this first half of the school year, the whole mental health counseling Centerstone thing was the gorilla in the room and has been the main topic of conversation. Having said that, that issue has been hopefully settled for moving forward. But guidance counselors and their affiliated occupations, you know, for years and years and decades, I've been hearing we don't have enough of them. You know, we've got this high school with 1,000 kids, and you've got two or three guidance counselors trying to rope them all in and get them scholarships and help with their studies. Are we where we need to be there?
I would say we're closer. We are pretty close to 250 to 1 in terms of guidance counselors. And then you throw on top of that, our high schools have college and career access counselors. There is some talk about, especially at the Future Ready centers, do we need dedicated career counselors? Like, there's a difference between thinking about how do you advise a student going to college and how are you advising a student that's wanting to go right into the workforce. So I would say that's probably the next step, but we've made a ton of progress. And I would say it goes back to the first few years of the Brian Johnson administration of recognizing industry standards like 250 to 1 for counselors. We weren't anywhere close to it. I think we were like 450 to 1.
Right.
And now we are very close, if not at 250 to 1. So we've made progress, but I think the reason I would say we're not where we need to be is you continually have to think about, okay, what's the next step? And for us right now, I think the next step is how do we make better connections with industries and businesses and think the same way about a kid that wants to go right into the workforce as we do a kid that wants to go to a four-year university. And that's where those maybe career counselors could benefit our kids.
All right, cell phones, a continuing hot topic. I want to say this is December. I'm going to do a little estimate. I'm going to say about 10 months ago, Joe Smith, who was board chair at the time, called and said, I've got a story for you. I want you to get this on the news. I'm going to put forward a proposal that would eliminate cell phone use. And he gave me his reasons. And I remember thinking, I'm not sure this will fly. You know, this is something a lot of people have certainly kind of dug in on, and they're okay with it. And he said, well, it's going to have to fly. This is what we're going to do. So here we are in December. The policy's in place. How's it going?
I think it's gone really well, but we came to a what I would consider a really good compromise. And so I don't think there was ever a lot of debate from between board members or even from the administration about the idea of saying from bell to bell, you don't have your cell phone. The biggest part of the debate was where does that cell phone go from bell to bell? We talked about yonder pouches. We talked about leaving them in cars. We talked about, you know, making sure they were locked up in their lockers. And where we came is basically like they can stay in your backpack. They just can't come out. I think, you know, we implemented it fully right after fall break. Some schools had started beginning the school year just anticipating that this policy was going to change. And I would say that it's gone really, really well. I've gotten maybe, I would say somewhere under half a dozen complaints from parents. And they are, I thought we would get more of them. It's complaints about how are you took up my child's phone for the second time on Friday. That means we can't get it back until Tuesday. And it is imperative my kid have their phone this weekend for, you know, X reason.
Yeah.
We've gotten those complaints. We've gotten complaints just about the consistency of it being implemented in terms of like, my kid had it before school and it still got taken up. But they, from what I've heard, they've been very, very low. I think it's gone remarkably well. I think that the compromise of where the policy ended up, and it goes back even more than a year. I mean, we spent hours and hours and hours talking about this at board meetings, but I thought we got the policy to a really good place. I thought the board did a really good job of working together to kind of get to a common ground. And I think it's been beneficial for our kids and for our schools.
I will admit, I thought there would be a firestorm, and thankfully there's not. So it looks like principals, administrators must be, you know, meeting that happy medium somewhere of making it work. So it's been a pleasant surprise. You and I talk occasionally about the various designations by the State Department of Education test scores, state report card, rewards districts, reward schools, advancing districts, so forth and so on. I have to admit, it's kind of a blur sometimes. Just seems like every couple months there's
something
some new list of these schools have done well, these districts are struggling, and so forth. I recall the term advancing district was designated for Hamilton County. I assume that's a good thing. Let's talk about that and just what you're proud of and what you need to work on.
I think I've been really consistent the last 4 years at saying we can't just look at one data point. It often gets attributed to just achievement and growth because we get so caught up in value-added scores. We get so caught up in achievement scores and which one is more important. They're both important. And so you'll hear me say things like, you know, the sign of a healthy district is when achievement and growth are moving in the right direction. I think that the school designation of us being an advancing district, you know, number one, what I'm proud of is first time since 2019, we've been an advancing district. We've been satisfactory consistently for a number of years. What that designation, why I think it is important is it looks across a broad range of data points. It's not just about growth. It's not just about achievement. It takes into consideration graduation. It takes into consideration truancy data. And so it looks at a broad range of data points, which to me is what we should be doing. You're right. It's a blur. I mean, we start in August getting data and it doesn't end until almost December. And so there's a lot of different things that come out. But to me, this is the one that looks at the broadest range of data points. And so it is something we should be proud of. It's something that our teachers, our school leaders should be proud of, our school board should be proud of it. And I think the community should be proud of that designation. Doesn't mean that we're done. I mean, we have a lot of work to do, and we're always going to have a lot of work to do. But I don't think, and I'm not good at this, a blind spot for me, we don't stop and celebrate good things enough. And I think that we have got to, as a community, look at that and congratulate our schools, congratulate our teachers, our principals, and say job well done, because it's a big deal.
It really is. Having worked and communicated with so many superintendents in my career, they're all different. And I can remember some here in Hamilton County who didn't get out of that office that often, really. And I'm always amused when we have a new employee at my place of work who may be 23, 24 years old. And I'll say, where'd you graduate from? And they'll say, you know, so-and-so high school. Like, oh, yeah, your principal was Sue Smith. Huh? If you say so. You know, and I mean, sometimes they don't even know who their principal is if that person didn't get out of the office that much and mingle with students. One thing I've noticed about you, you don't stay in your office. Oftentimes I'll be tracking you down and it's like, well, he's delivering pizza at East Hamilton, or he's having coffee with the people at Daisy Elementary, or whatever the case may be. Is that a priority for you?
Yeah, 100%. I think that, number one, I think it's always been a priority for me, even in the role of a principal, right? I was coming up at a time in school leadership where there was like this debate between should you be an instructional leader or should you be that old school like manager of a building?
Yeah.
And there's a fine line between the two of them. I had multiple people tell me like, don't spend time in the cafeteria. Like, you've got better things to do. But then I had a few that were like, no, you need to be in the cafeteria. Mm-hmm. And what I found is that places like the cafeteria, being in the hallway at arrival, is one of the few times that you have very authentic conversations with kids, right? There's nothing like going to the cafeteria and just sitting down with a group of kids. Like, you're going to hear their real voice, where if you pull them in for a discipline issue or talk to them in a class, it's different. And so their guard's down a little bit, and it just is an authentic conversation. To me, that's how you build relationships. This role, it's different, and I found out really quick it's hard to build relationships in this role, and it's hard to have that authentic conversation with people when you're in this role. I don't think I've changed a lot. People may disagree with that, but I feel like I'm a pretty approachable person. But there's something about the title that if I'm meeting with someone in this office or if I'm meeting with someone on the board – room. It's different than just going and having coffee with them or sitting down and sharing a pizza with them. And so we prioritized being in schools, but not just being in schools, trying to do it in a way that creates the conditions where authentic conversations can happen. I think it's helped, but there's also a selfish reason of being in your office is not fun. Most of the time, what you're doing in that office are the parts of the job that I don't like. And being in schools is how you see how things are actually going and can get some real feedback.
I can also recall a couple of superintendent hirings over the past few decades in which the person was hired or chosen by the school board in part because of political skills. Because sometimes during budget hearings, budget requests, you need a superintendent who is either politically connected or who can establish relationships with commissioners to perhaps get some extra dollars in the budget. I didn't hear that with you. Nobody I heard said anything like we're hiring Justin Robertson because he's a master politician. But yet, that's part of the gig. I mean, you've got to establish those relationships and you've got to have ongoing communication with the funders, the commissioners. And we've got budget. It's hard to believe, but within a few months, you'll be right back into that groove again. So are you comfortable with that part of the job and do you feel like you've gotten better at it?
I don't know that I've got. I mean, I guess I've gotten a little bit better. I am comfortable with it because I believe in the school system. I believe in the importance of public education. And so it's really easy for me to advocate for what I believe that our kids deserve. If I didn't believe in it, if I wasn't passionate, it would probably be hard. It's not natural. Like, I don't love that part of the job, but I recognize it's something that has to be done. I think that what happens in public and this is where I'm not a good politician. I probably shouldn't say this. What happens in public and what happens in private are very different things. Like, I have very good conversations with commissioners and board members that maybe don't come across that way in public. People ask me all the time, Rhonda Thurman, mm-hmm. right? Like, oh God, aren't you glad Rhonda? I'm like, I loved working with Rhonda. We didn't agree. Didn't agree on a lot of things, but behind the scenes, Rhonda and I spoke a lot. She was always very respectful. She was very honest with me, and we had a good relationship. I can also point to even current county commissioners like Joe Graham. I've known Joe Graham since I was at Lookout Valley Elementary and his kids were there. Ran into his nephew the other day at the Challenger Center. Joe and I, a couple times in public, have gone back and forth, but we have very honest conversations. We always have, and we know what we don't agree on. I think Joe is a good man. I think he would say the same thing about me. We just tend to disagree, and sometimes in public, that comes across as like adversarial. Not adversarial. I just think that public education deserves investment. I think it should be the number one priority of this community. And that's where I'm very comfortable working with them to get where I think we need to go.
Well, I'm glad you said that. First, I definitely agree in your assessments of the individuals you mentioned. Joe has also been very cooperative with me. It's fascinating to me how someone like a Rhonda Thurman, who certainly a polarizing figure, people agree with her or they don't. Mm-hmm. But from a news media perspective, she was available. She was transparent. You knew where she stood. She didn't run away when the camera and microphone were in the neighborhood. There are some board members over the years who have been hiding from me, and I still haven't found them. I mean, so I appreciate
probably some superintendents too.
A couple of those would certainly be in that category. But it's always refreshing to see an elected official who understands the obligation they made when they signed up for this. I'll say that. One topic that you have been passionate about in some recent public meetings is the topic of diversity, equity, inclusion, particularly mm-hmm. among hiring staff members, faculty members. Having grown up in an area with zero diversity, I have regretted that my entire life, and I've been catching up my entire life just being a part of the real world, which I was not for the first 20 years of my life. And so someone like me, I'm puzzled. I'm at a loss to explain why anyone would not advocate for more diversity. So I know this is kind of a current topic in the news, and by the time people hear this, there may be some resolution. But why are you so passionate about that?
Well, I would say, like, I grew up very similar to you. Like, I wasn't around a lot of people that looked different than me or thought different than me. But obviously, as you grow up and you go through your adult life, that changes. I'm passionate about it because of the experiences I've had with kids in schools. You know, my last leadership opportunity was at Red Bank High School, and I always say Red Bank High School is one of the few schools that looks very much like our community looks in terms of diversity. And you can see the differences of how kids respond when they have someone that's an adult that they know cares about them, wants their has their best interests in mind. I go back to my first year there. There was a guy named Gary James. Gary James, unbelievable human being, an unbelievable man. I tell people all the time, I'm like, I might not have survived that first year if it wasn't for Gary James. Gary James, a pillar of the Black community, and was someone that had been through a lot of experiences that I never had been through.
Sure.
And I remember it was very clear to me that first year that even though I feel like I was pretty good at connecting with kids. I think that most kids knew that, you know, I was going to be fair and I wanted them to do well. But there were some things, especially with our Black males, that Gary could communicate that I couldn't do. Like, even if I wanted to and I knew the right thing to say, when I would say it, it just doesn't come across the same way. And so to me, like, that moment was like, this is why it's important, right? When I think back about my time and, you know, I always go back to two people, outside of my dad that I'm like, these are the two guys that input, they looked like me, right? They had been through and not just from, you know, race perspective, but they had been through similar experiences. They both came from, parents that had been married their entire lives. They both grew up, you know, very middle class. And we need mentors and adults in our buildings that went through similar experiences and look like our kids. To me, it makes a huge difference. What irritates me about this topic is we can't have conversations about the specifics of it. We want to go to, like, the fringes. And what I mean by that is, like, I'm not saying that you hire someone that's not qualified or that doesn't deserve the job. It's not what we're saying. We're not going to lower the bar. We want to put great teachers and great leaders in front of all of our kids. But, you know, for years, this is a very small example. For years, we weren't going to HBCUs at all for recruitment. That's a really easy step that doesn't cost us any more money. It's just a little bit of an adjustment, and that could make a little bit of a difference. We also weren't doing anything to use our current experiences of our current faculty to help recruit others, right, and giving them platforms to go help us recruit or to send the message out. And so it's little things that aren't costing us money but are just recognizing the fact that having a Gary James in your building, it makes a big difference, and it matters.
I'd take a building full of Gary James. I absolutely would. I have so many fond memories of him.
I could probably tell some stories that might get us both in trouble.
And if he looked at me right now and said, tuck your shirt tail in, I would do it.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, at my age, I'd say, Mr. James, whatever you say. And one quick note as we wrap up, it's always fun to do a little shout-out to a school. Yesterday, Glenn Wagner's broadcasting class from Red Bank High School toured Channel 3. They produced the main news, a weekly newscast. And, oh, man, what you touched on a minute ago, just a diverse, positive, outgoing, energetic group of young people. I would hire any of them today. They have a great role model and mentor in Glenn Wagner, one of Hamilton County's bright lights.
They still call him Wags?
Wags. He's just a world-class human being. But it's always a joy to see, you know, a class that works, that people connect with, that students look forward to attending and being a part of. And if I'd had a class like that when I was in high school, I'd be a better broadcaster today.
Yeah, Wags, great. A funny story about him. My first year at Red Bank, they're playing a student faculty basketball game, and he took an elbow across the eye. And I'm like, oh gosh, this is all we need is, you know, a teacher going to the hospital. He ended up getting like 5 stitches, but he's a great guy.
He's a gamer. He'll take an elbow to the head anytime and keep on going. Well, it's always good to see you. I understand we have a group of area superintendents in the adjoining room. I will say, just from a discipline standpoint, they get loud. They're noisy. We kept on going, folks, and we could probably open the door right now and shock them all, but we'll let them have their privacy until their meeting is over. Generally, they behave well, though.
So. They usually do. Sometimes they can get a little out of control, but it's a good group.
They work hard, and I know you've got the holiday season coming, and everybody's ready for that. And next year, we'll do this again.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you, and happy holidays. Appreciate you committing to this the last 6 months. Been very helpful.
And thank you all for listening to Real Talk.